The presidential race began 1 year, 7 months, and 19 days ago when Ted Cruz became the first major candidate to declare he was running. Now that we've reached the end of the campaigns, we are gathering one last time for our weekly 2016 roundtable.
Here and now,
2016.
That is the last time you will ever hear that. So lovers of the jingle, we're sorry. And haters, you're going to have to find something new to hate.
End of an era.
Greg Moore, former editor of the Denver Post and visiting journalism professor at the University of Colorado, is with us. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Jeremy. Hi, Peter.
And Rick Klein, also with us, political director at ABC News. Hi, Rick.
Do I finally get to sing?
Well, that's what I thought you were going to do.
2016.
There you go.
Sounds so sweet at the end, yes.
Yeah.
Well, so much to talk about right now. And Rick, I think one of the big questions is, what kind of president is Donald Trump going to be? Is he going to be a deal maker who is not an ideologue, or is he going to be someone who really appeals to his base of supporters?
Donald Trump told us once that there are two Donald Trumps, and I am inclined to believe him. We've seen the two Donald Trumps even in the wake of his election on Tuesday night. We saw historic, humble, kind of Mexico City-style Donald Trump, where he seemed to be soaking it all in. We saw that yesterday at the Oval Office and in Washington. And then he turns around and tweets about how the protesters are unfair. That's the other side. I think we're going to get both.
But then he turned around and tweeted again and said, well, actually, these nice small protesters, we're all going to come together.
Three Trumps. Now, I think we're going to see the deal maker at times. We're also going to see a president who channels his base, social media fueled, and lets the country engage with him in ways that we haven't seen. I really think we are in for constant surprises from a candidate that surprised us from the start.
Greg, it feels like a moment for reflection, I guess, at the end of this whole thing. Have we learned anything about ourselves as a country through all this?
We probably have learned that there's some parts of the country that we don't understand very well. I think a lot of the interior part of the country that went for Donald Trump was, you know, a part of the country that was really, really frustrated. And I'm not sure they were really reflected that extensively in the coverage, whether we're talking about television or newspapers or what have you. And I think that's what drove the surprise. The other thing, to go back to your first point, the one thing that's interesting about Trump, to underscore the dealmaker part, this guy comes in really not owing anybody anything, not big media, not big money, not Republicans, not Democrats, other special interests. So he can kind of do whatever he wants to do. And so, you know, he's going to surprise us. He's going to be combative. But he also has a great opportunity that a lot of politicians coming into the presidency don't have.
But does he owe people like Newt Gingrich, Rudy Giuliani, Sarah Palin?
He owes those voters more than anything else. I mean, you know, he didn't pick Giuliani or Newt Gingrich for the vice presidency, and they didn't walk away from him. I think that, you know, he basically indicted the entire establishment, and Gingrich and Giuliani are really a part of that, too.
But, Rick, you we're talking here about whether or not he was able to drain the swamp, were his words. There is some concern that his transition team is staffed by lobbyists. It's staffed with people who have direct ties to the energy and financial industries. He'd promised to step away from this sort of thing. How's that going over in Washington?
I think the swamp laid out the red carpet for him yesterday. The question is what kind of draining we're talking about. And he's going to have to employ some insiders. But I agree with Greg. I think we are going to see a guy who comes in without the loyalties that usually bind an incoming president or incoming politician of having to check certain boxes with certain interest groups. He's not going to care about most of them. That's not the same as saying he's going to be free of special interests. He is going to be all over with lots of conflicts of interest at every levels of his administration, even in foreign policy, as well as lots of financial issues and criminal justice areas. But he is not going to have to say, I need to do this to make sure the base is there. He once said that he could walk down Fifth Avenue and people still vote for him. He tested that proposition, and I think there's something to that.
I think actually it wasn't that he would walk down Fifth Avenue and people would vote for him. It's that he could shoot somebody.
Oh, I missed the detail. You're right. You're right.
Yes. Important detail. So let's talk about these protests that have been going on. This is what was happening in Portland, Oregon last night.
All persons must leave the area immediately by traveling to the east. This is an unlawful gathering.
That sound from Coin TV. Greg, a lot of people very unhappy around the country. There is talk of trying to convince electors to not use their electoral votes for Donald Trump. There is talk of California seceding because of what happened. Yeah. What do you make of this anger, and especially because Hillary Clinton will have won the popular vote?
Yeah, I think that drives it. And people are just so disappointed and really shocked and angry. And I think this is just part of some catharsis that, you know, needs to sort of play out. But hopefully it will not last, you know, too long, because that is really not what this country is about. The peaceful transition of power involves the acceptance of the election. You know, people exercise their right to vote, and they won. And as people tend to say, elections have consequences, but they also have responsibilities. And everyone's anxious to see how Donald Trump and the Republicans exercise the opportunity and responsibility that they have
well,
now.
Well, let's talk about that, because Trump made a trip to Capitol Hill yesterday. Here he is talking about what his first priorities will be.
Whether it's health care or immigration, so many different things. We'll be working on them very rapidly, and I think we'll be putting things up pretty quickly.
And Trump was with someone that he's clashed with over the past few months, House Speaker Paul Ryan. Here's what Ryan said.
Donald Trump had one of the most impressive victories we've ever seen. And we're going to turn that victory into progress for the American people. And we are now talking about how we're going to hit the ground running to make sure that we can get this country turned around and make America great again.
Rick, water under the bridge, I guess. He even used Donald Trump's tagline there, make America great again. How do you see Trump working with a Republican Congress?
That was the second most striking thing of the day to me after the Obama meeting, was that Paul Ryan said that. Look, I think they are coming to terms with the fact that they're going to have to work together. I think the fact that Paul Ryan has said Donald Trump has earned a mandate and they could work together to make America great again, that's a signal that he's on board the Trump train. Now, will it last? Will they clash? Of course they will clash. It will not last. However, they are going to enter this realizing that they can, to borrow a phrase from the other side, stronger together. And I can see this teamwork working in terms of pushing an agenda, at least initially. Paul Ryan is saying to his folks, I'm on board for this. And Trump is going to say right back at him, I'm not going to try to oust you. I'm going to let you keep that job as long as we're friends.
What do you see them actually accomplishing most likely in the first 100 days?
I think the repeal of Obamacare is probably the biggest legislative thing. It's actually going to be hard to do to get past the Senate, but I think in terms of a push, that will happen. I think they're going to start work on immigration. I'm most intrigued by his talk, Donald Trump's talk about an infrastructure bill, a jobs bill that would involve rebuilding America, because that's an area where you could really scramble the politics. To Greg's point, you wouldn't have the same kind of interest groups at play, and you could get some Democrats on board. That might be the most interesting and most unexpected thing out of the first 100 days.
And Greg,
I agree with that. I think right out the box, it's the economy, stupid. It's about jobs. And coming out with a infrastructure bill that creates jobs, that creates some bipartisanship, would be an important signal to send in the first 100 days.
Greg, what did Hillary Clinton do wrong as we look back? And who's the leader of the Democratic Party right now?
Well, in terms of what she did wrong, and I'm not a political pundit or anything, but, you know, she made the same kind of mistakes this time that she did in 2008 and underestimating the importance of the caucuses, and in this case, underestimating the importance of being present in certain communities herself, not sending surrogates. I think, you know, when you look at the turnout in 2012 for Obama and now, and almost all the groups where Obama prevailed, she did worse than he did in 2012. So her vaunted turnout, the vote machine, just did not come through for her. In terms of who's in the head of the Democratic Party now, it's either Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, I would guess.
So you see a pivot far to the left.
Yeah,
Rick,
I do.
What do you think?
I agree with that entirely. I think the fact that you're seeing Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer agree on their choice of the next DNC chair is Keith Ellison, a Muslim American younger congressman from Minnesota, who does hail from the Sanders-Warren wing of the party, suggests that they see the power on the left. And I think that gets to the problem with the Clinton campaign, one of the many problems, which is that this was a top-down campaign in a bottom-up year. They tried to stifle the competition. They tried to choke off the money. They tried to stop the Sanders insurgency at every turn and tell Democrats that she was the choice, rather than listen to Democrats about their priorities.
Rick, I want to ask you something that I've heard over the last few days, which is, well, Bernie Sanders would have won. Do you think that, as the political director for ABC News, do you think Bernie Sanders would have won if he had run against Trump?
I think it's unknowable. I think it's like saying that the Red Sox would have beaten the Cubs instead. It would have been a different series. It would have been a different campaign that would have played out along different lines. But there was something genuine about the Bernie Sanders phenomena that would have given the Trump campaign a run for its money in terms of tapping into the fears, the resentments, the anger that's out there in America in both political parties.
Well, I said it was an end of an era for the jingle singers. It really does feel like we've been at this for a long time. We have, so...
So hopefully next time in 4 years we can limit the length of the campaign.
And hopefully.
Oh, boy, that would be nice.
Bipartisan agreement.
Rick Klein, political director at ABC News, and Greg Moore, former editor of the Denver Post and visiting journalism professor at the University of Colorado. We will say you guys are welcome back anytime, even if it doesn't have a jingle to go along with it. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you very much.